Hi, I'm Ben Riga, Platform Advisor with the Windows Azure Platform Evangelism team. I've been walking around PDC pulling people out of the corridors into this little corner where we're chatting about some of the things that they're doing on the Azure platform. With me today is Rob Fraser, did I get that right?
Yep.
Head of Cloud Computing with Risk Metrics. You may have seen him on the video in the keynote at PDC, the first day keynote. Rob, you're head of cloud computing,
yep.
But that's kind of a wide-ranging thing.
Yep.
Tell me a little bit about, first of all, what does Risk Metrics do?
Okay.
And then what is your role, and how does Azure fit into all
okay.
that? That's a wide thing.
So yeah, sure. Okay. Risk Metrics is, we've been an established company. We spun out JP Morgan in 1998, mm-hmm. So we've been independent, and we IPO'd on New York Stock Exchange about 2 years ago, public traded company. Our business lines are primarily risk management for financial institutions and governance services, mm-hmm. So proxy voting for the industry. Our work on Azure, and which we talk about today, is primarily and solely focused on the risk business. So on the risk business, our primary offerings are the calculation of financial risk for our clients. So that is, our clients hold large portfolios of sort of assets, whether that be stocks, bonds, complex assets, complex structured products, and we provide services where we can calculate and estimate the risk of those products.
Mm-hmm.
Now that's kind of a difficult computational problem. There's two fundamental things you have to do. The first is sort of project forward and estimate the range of market prices that can affect these particular instruments. Then having done that, calculate the price of all these assets that they hold in those
right.
market factors.
Now, right.
that sounds straightforward, except that a lot of the time you have to do it by simulation. So we end up running complex Monte Carlo simulations to estimate the market factors.
Mm-hmm.
And then once we've got those market factors, complex Monte Carlo simulations to then estimate the price of some of these complex assets. So what we end up doing a lot of the time for complex products is running Monte Carlo simulations within Monte Carlo simulations, and the whole thing gets very computationally expensive.
So today you're doing it in your own data center?
That's right, yeah. We have a large on-premise capability, many thousands of cores. And we've developed over the last 5 to 10 years a very large-scale, horizontally scaled analytics architecture, which enables us to sort of handle this kind of load.
And so your customers are financial
yeah.
institutions,
yeah.
And you're doing risk analysis on their portfolio.
That's right. So we do this for central banks, large hedge funds, banks, some of the biggest asset managers.
So where does Azure fit in? You know, obviously, you have your own data center.
Right.
How does Azure help you take that further?
Right, so we're very much a business of peaks. So we have a strong spikiness
mm-hmm.
to our low characteristics, and so we obviously have to scale our architecture to cope with peak demand. So there's that use case, but there's also the fact that we've seen an ongoing and increasing demand for computational power.
Mm-hmm.
Financial services area in general has been at the forefront of high performance computing.
Right.
Right? And I know that we do a lot of work with high performance computing server.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a reason for that. It is computationally demanding. So for us, for a number of years, we've been looking to see if there's a way of offloading large amounts of calculation in bursts, particularly for short periods, onto other providers. So we've been interested in the whole idea of using, first of all, when it was grid computing, when that was the big
mm-hmm.
watch over,
mm-hmm.
when cloud came along, of using that as part of our calculation architecture. And so the fact we've built our architecture with this use case in mind enabled us to move on this quite quickly.
So why are there peaks? I mean, I can understand there's a need for a big capacity to do those calculations, but why do they peak during the day? And
right, because a lot of times it's to do with the data management problem inside financial institutions. They will close their books at the end of the trading day.
Mm-hmm.
They have to assemble the data on positions, the transactions and trades are done, aggregate that data, and get it prepared. So generally there tends to be some time during the middle of the night, Eastern time, for example, the data becomes ready from clients, and also the market data we take in from various market data providers is then ready. That means that then there's a relatively short window of a few hours before we get into the preparations for the next trading day.
Wow.
And so that creates a very short period of time to do a lot of this stuff, because for some of our clients, they can't trade, they can't execute their business functions unless they have our numbers.
Interesting. Now, I know that you were showing me some graphs. In fact, why don't I stop the camera? We'll point the camera at these graphs, because I think they're really interested in showing how these peaks happen across the day, across the week, and so on.
Okay.
Sound good?
Yeah.
Let's do it. All right. All right, so this is an interesting one. Talk me through this. What is this showing here?
Okay, so basically this is a graph of
On the y-axis was just a measure of the analytics throughput. So this isn't CPU or sort of machine time consumption. This is actual throughput in terms of business measurable load, so risk analytics load.
Definitely spiky. I mean, yeah. Obviously, you can see that.
That's right. Then along the x-axis, you've got essentially this date. It's through a calendar month, and we've actually sampled the load on an hourly basis. So as you see, it's extremely spiky. You can see Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, in a quiet period.
So this is 1 month's worth of data.
Exactly, that's right. And obviously, so here you can see the impact of these limited amounts of time when we do see a key part of our peak loading.
Wow.
So yeah, that's the kind of the timeliness and the peak characteristics.
So clearly you're building for that capacity. You have to hit that peak, or that peak there.
Right.
And yet for the rest of the time, you're probably at 10% utilization overall, right?
Yeah. So I think the key thing to get across with this graph, though, is though that we've kind of embraced the peaks. We want these peaks to be high. We want to be able to do and be able to scale to do more and more complex analytics for more clients. So that scalability drive.
And so you're saying you're happy with the peaks.
Yeah.
You want the peaks to go higher.
Yeah. Let's say we want to embrace with our architecture. We want to embrace it. We want to be able to support far higher peaks and have and scale out our offering. And so clearly at an economic level of investment, cloud provides the model for us to try and do that, hence the way we looked at the Azure RISC-based solution we've implemented.
Okay. Can we walk through maybe the architecture of how this
Absolutely.
All
yeah. Okay. So if I just give me a second here.
Or you wanted to talk about that trend? There,
yeah, sure. Right? Let's talk about the trend as well. Let me just bring that up for you. So this is just an interesting sort of illustration of part of the complexity problem. This graph shows the maximum complexity of problems that we have processed in our architecture and our infrastructure over time. So going back to 1994, when we were in JP Morgan, we had a very simple spreadsheet to do a limited amount of calculation on a few time series. Mm-hmm. So take that as a baseline. This is a log scale and shows how over time the biggest problems we have addressed with our architecture have evolved. To give an illustration of this, if you'd put Moore's Law on the graph, where depending on your interpretation process of how it doubles every 2 years, that's the kind of slope that you get on this graph.
Nice.
What we actually have on our graph is that more or less the complexity of problems we've tackled with our analytics infrastructure has more or less doubled every 6 months.
The trend is not your friend here.
But in here lies our real business value to our clients.
Right.
So if I now just quickly turn to the architecture which we're using. A key thing to understand about our use case in Azure is that we have two kinds of processing that we do in our own on-premise data center.
Mm-hmm.
So the key areas here, this purple area here is large-scale data-dependent processing. So we have multi-terabyte stores of market and pricing data.
Mm-hmm.
And within this sort of area here, we also hold our clients' own information. So there what we need to do is generate, based on our clients' holdings and all this market data we have, generate the pricing scenarios. So those sets of market prices and factors that we need to then calculate the price on to estimate the risk.
Mm-hmm.
So this here is all about generating that large-scale data-dependent set of market pricing scenarios. What we then do, using HPC Server SOA Broker, is then distribute those pricing packets, those work packets, across a large-scale grid of pricing engines.
Now, this is the architecture in your own data center.
Exactly, that's right. Right. That's right.
Okay.
So obviously what we looked at here was to think, okay, what can we do in terms of distribution of these pricing scenarios?
Mm-hmm.
The actual work packets themselves, just to illustrate, they contain a description of the financial asset, they contain description of the market factors, and the compute time is roughly 150 milliseconds to 30 seconds, depending on the complexity of the asset.
Mm-hmm.
What we get back is the pricing information, the whole diagnostics. So it was fairly straightforward just to think, given we're on SOA, given we have this existing distributable architecture, could we throw Windows Azure into the picture and actually start running some of the pricing engines and the pricing software up on Azure to give us that elastic capacity when we needed it?
So interesting. So there's not really a UI here. This is all engine, all calculation,
and
all the time.
And critically,
right,
this is cloud integration with an operation, existing large-scale operational infrastructure. So this is not a toy application. This is large-scale computation for serious use cases.
Okay, great. Well, let me put the camera back and let's chat a little bit more
sure.
about how this all comes together.
Okay.
So that was pretty interesting.
Right.
Obviously, like I said, you said, you have this huge data center.
Mm.
So now you're going to take advantage of Azure. So
right.
So what are you doing there? How are you scaling, and what are the numbers?
Okay. So let's talk about initial target sort of use case. So we're looking at wanting to use around about 10,000 worker roles on Azure. Going into next year to provide us with specific burst computation on some sets of financial assets that we're really interested in sort of in enhancing our capabilities around. But going through next year, there's a lot of other stuff we could potentially do. So we have been talking about the potential of using up to 30,000 worker roles on the cloud by the end of next year.
So obviously scaling your own data center to 30,000,
right.
It's doable, but economically... Setting up a data center, that's a lot of...
But let's be clear about our motivations here. I mean, for RiskMetrics, moving to Azure is not a kind of total cost of operation play at all. What it's about is about empowerment of innovation, because we can now consider solutions and ways of providing sort of analytics services to our clients that previously just would not have been economically viable. We can now think about those problems where we could say, if we take a very large number of computational nodes or capability, and use it for very short periods of time, we can now do that at an economic level of investment, which we could never do before. So cloud for us is a real enabler of innovative service delivery.
So it's going to allow you to have different products. So in addition to helping you get the products that you're doing today done better, faster, cheaper, you'll be having additional services available to your customers.
Yeah, I wouldn't say better, faster, cheaper as such. I'd say that what it gives us the ability to take what we have as a core competitive advantage, which is scale, and then add on elastic scaling onto our own fixed scaling in our data centers. And that's the key value add for us.
Okay, so what's the timeline? Obviously, how long have you been working on this? And
right, so we actually, the idea was hatched between myself and Phil Jacob, who's our head of analytics, in March, that we'd consider a project on Azure.
Mm-hmm.
And like all great things, it started as an intern project. So we got a student in, Stuart, and he came in July into an office, and we, by that point, managed to get your guys' attention. So our initial meeting with the Azure team was middle of July, I think, this year. By August, we're on the TAP program. By September, we were in Redmond doing a deep dive on the architectural pattern. And we're up to 2,000 nodes, 2,000 instances of high-level CPU. We can talk about that by the end of October. And so we're now
2,000 nodes, running them all at 100% for a couple minutes a day.
Well, I mean, we did a sustained test where we managed to show a sustained load characteristics up in the high 80s to low 90% of CPU.
Wow.
And we've still got some further optimization work to do. We can talk about the architectural pattern. But we're confident we can get very high CPU utilization across 10,000 instances as we go into next year.
So talk about the architectural pattern.
Sure.
So what did you do? What did you have to change from the architecture that you already had to do that?
Okay. So we already invested heavily in our own horizontally scalable analytics architecture. The first sort of iterations of those were based on proprietary socket technology and load balances.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
The next generation we now have now is moving all onto HPC server and SLE broker. So we've already invested in this large-scale horizontally distributed infrastructure. So we're already at a good point. Architecturally, we're at a good starting point. So the key work we had to do was then engineer the ability to load a large number of remote processors and use them effectively.
Mm-hmm.
So what are the challenges? Clearly, we have to generate the load in a way which is amenable to transferring over connections with higher latency and bandwidth restrictions than we have locally onto the cloud. We then need to distribute those effectively across a large number of instances and then make adequate use of them. So the key architectural part of the pattern was decoupling load generation from the messaging and transmission, and then from the actual CPU usage on the nodes itself. So we took a very strong design approach to that decoupling. So the pattern, the architecture we're using is we gather up these pricing requests, these work packets internally, and group them into chunks. So it's a little bit more sort of a meaningful bit of processing for the worker roles than just a single packet. They go up and we place those onto queues, and we have a number of queue pairs, and we've been working to see what the relationship between the number of queues is to worker roles.
These would be Windows Azure storage
queues.
That's
right, the storage queues, that's
mm-hmm.
right.
Mm-hmm.
So the jobs go onto the storage queues and are picked up by the worker roles and processed, and results returned to the results queues, and we pull them down. The key innovation for us in terms of key bit of work, in terms of making this work efficiently, was asynchronous mechanism. So both on our side and our data center, asynchronously creating these packets and the groups of packets to pass up to Azure, and then on the Azure side.
How are you getting those packets into the queues? Are you using the service bus at all to do that, or is that?
No, we built a component called RISC Burst Server. Mm-hmm. We're just literally making the web service requests up to
just
up to
pure
the
web service.
Absolutely. So at that point, we get the packets onto the queues, and then we have background threads which are pulling those packets off the queues over to each instance, so that as soon as the current packet which the instance is working on is finished, we have a background thread to write the results to the results queue, and then we pick up the latest data that work packet that's there.
Well, there's never any wasted time.
That's right, and the whole of the engineering work has been around engineering that flow and the loading from our own sort of analytics architecture and our data center to ensure that you get optimal usage on those nodes. So that's the architectural pattern. It's an interesting one because it's about bridging on-premise with cloud, mm-hmm. And about the engineering work you need to do to take account of the fact that while we want as seamless as experience as possible between the two, and that's why we're excited about HPC and the idea of having HPC and Azure as complementary technologies. You can never imagine the network's not there, and so that's been the engineering work to really, really deal with that problem.
Fantastic. Well, Rob, thank you so much for coming in and chatting with us. This is obviously something that's pretty important on the Azure cloud. The whole idea of HPC as a pattern, we're seeing that through a lot of other. So thanks again for coming. And thanks for speaking. In fact, I'll make sure that I put a link to the presentation that you did earlier this week at the conference in the show notes. Mm-hmm. And thanks again.
My pleasure. Thanks, Beth.
And thank you for watching.